So this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think we are joined by UNIFOR veteran Tony Lea. Are you there, Tony?
I am, Phil. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I was just getting the news from Petersburg, so I thought it was pretty important. Let's start with the big story that is just changing as we speak. I got up this morning thinking that the Longshore was Union of West Coast was on strike, but during the day something happened. So I'll let you pick it up from there. What's happening with the longshoremen in BC?
The most recent news is that they reached a new tentative agreement sometime yesterday, I think, that will be put to a vote of their members. I'm not sure when that's going to be. And they're at work.
They have gone to work in the meantime.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been quite a roller coaster. They were on strike for a while, long enough to really put pressure on the employers they work for because of the disruption to shipping. It's an important shipping set of ports, obviously, about 7,400 workers. And the government, federal government, intervened and tried to put pressure on them to agree to settle a strike, probably for less than they were really trying to achieve, which I think some of the key issues had to do with job security in the future and technological change.
Mm-hmm. Did you happen to see the, I understand they published their demands somewhere.
I don't have ready access to that. I'm not sure, no. But I do know that they're very concerned about the impact on their job security as technology changes going into the future, and they were trying to get protection for their jobs. And the federal government, while they didn't step in and order them back to work, they really used a lot of muscle. They gave them a 24-hour deadline to agree to a resolution that was put together by the mediator, and that was rejected, then approved by the leadership group, and eventually it did go to the membership, which voted it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, I think that they were deciding whether or not they were going to issue another strike notice, because they have to give 72 hours notice. But in the meantime, they've now negotiated a new tentative agreement.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, by the way, anything about their procedure? Maybe Phil knows that. They'll be voting in a few days, or the voting starts now, or what happens?
They have a notice on their website saying that it's going to be voted on, but they don't set out the timeline.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure how they do that.
They are international longshoremen.
Yes.
So they are fraternal to the American, the West Coast international longshoremen.
They're part of that union.
In the States, yeah.
Yeah, they're part of that union. It's several locals in Western Canada.
Hmm. I guess the theme here is, and we're going to be talking about the other labor action as well, there seems to be more resistance on the part of actual voting members when it comes to looking at these contracts. The announcement that they have an agreement ain't necessarily so, right?
That's right. And that's been very striking in a number of cases that, you know, that I'm aware of where workers have been rejecting tentative agreements that have been recommended to them by their union leadership. Within my union, UNIFOR, it's been really striking, completely unprecedented. I'm not aware of anything like this happening in years past, but just in the last 2 years, I'm aware of seven different contracts that have been recommended to people and have been voted down by the membership.
Hmm. They're restless.
Well, they're not satisfied, and I think it speaks to The pressures that workers are under, they've had a steady deterioration of their wages because of inflation.
But their wages and hours and things like that, and part-timers and all this, these things can be very disturbing.
That's right, yeah. It's putting tremendous pressure on workers, and I think that it speaks to the fact that there's some real separation between union leadership and the membership. They're out of touch, and they're recommending contracts that look okay to them because they don't understand the day-to-day working and living conditions of the workers themselves, the members. And so the tentative agreements are being voted down.
Well, that was the case with Metro. I was reading the account in the Star of the I saw the picture of Lana Payne. I no longer call her Lana Turner, but Lana Payne was there with the members. But in the article, it said we had negotiated a good or the very best contract or some such language. And then, but the follow-up is, but they rejected it.
Yeah. Not only did they reject it, by the way, but the no vote was 72%, my understanding.
You wonder what they were, maybe this is a problem of the culture of negotiations these days, kind of a keeping a steady liaison with the members and saying, well, they're saying this, we're saying that, so that nobody's kind of surprised when they actually sit down and read it?
No, that's right. And it's a problem of outlook of union leaderships, and it's a problem of the structure of some unions, that there isn't good involvement of the members and regular contact between elected people and the membership. In the Metro stores, for example, in their collective agreement, each store is only entitled to one union rep for the whole store. And I think that they have 100, 150 workers per store, something like that. And they only have one.
That's not, we're talking about shifts. We're talking about one rep for the whole thing.
For the whole thing.
24
yeah.
hours a day.
Yeah.
Which is impossible.
Well, it's certainly inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't encourage engagement and involvement of members. They're too remote. And then when you get higher up in the leadership of the union in Unifor, staff representatives between their salary and their car allowances and daily expenses make $150,000 a year, and that's three times what the average Unifor member makes.
Hmm.
So there's not a lot of
part timers in there taking the work away from them.
No.
You also point out, apropos of this, and I want to follow on this notion, that the Teamsters have an agreement, tentative, I guess, to be ratified, with United Parcel Service. I love this number, 340,000?
Yes. If they had
340,000 members?
340,000 workers at UPS in the United States. If they had gone on strike, it would have been the largest single employer strike in U.S. history. But they made it very clear that they were demanding major improvements. And from what I've seen of their tentative agreement, it looks very, very good. Really major wage increases, substantial pension increases. They address the two-tier issue by completely eliminating the second tier. So everybody will be classified equally. They made major progress on part-timers, including a provision that UPS must eliminate 15,000 part-time jobs by converting them into 7,500 full-time jobs.
Wow. Now, and the most striking thing that I have heard about this from you is that the contract that they want them to, they put before them to ratify or not, is available to every member.
That's right. It's on right their now. Website. It's on the Teamster website. And, I was looking at it. Anybody can look at it. And certainly the members can look at it. They can pore through it and discuss it and ask questions and think about it. And they have between August 3rd and August 22nd to vote. So it's an extremely democratic approach. There's no information hidden from anybody, and there's lots of time for engagement and for the members to make up their mind whether or not they want to vote in favor or not.
Well, that brings us to tear and compare again. Did Unifor do that? If you get a contract at GM, et cetera, so when do you see the contract?
Unifor and even the CAW before that has not done that in the auto industry. Our practice has always been for the members to get a highlights sheet.
Oh, the highlights.
Highlights. We get the highlights.
The italicized.
As some people point out, we don't always get the low lights. We get the highlights. And
Yes, I like that point. Why, say, give it, yeah, tell me the good part, but also tell me the bad part.
Exactly. And, of course, a lot of times the devil is in the detail.
I heard that. I've seen that.
Auto workers who were members of Unifor at the last prior to the last contract negotiations in 2020, we circulated a petition asking that the full contract be published online for the members to review for 5 days before they voted. And that was rejected out of hand by the Unifor leadership. And Gary Dias was very dismissive about it. He refused to even reply to the over 1,700 members who signed that petition. No response at all. And when he was asked about it by the Automotive News, he said it wasn't on his radar because when he's hunting elephants, he doesn't pay attention to mice.
It's funny. I wonder if those mice ever got a chance to vote on him.
Well, yes, that would make a difference.
Oh, my. Yeah. But you pinpointed something really important. If people belong to the unions and they're in these difficulties, they have tier system, they have the part-time problems and the low, and wage issues and all that should be something that is always in front of them to see. The language of, the contract under which they are working and then the proposed language of the new contract. They should be able to see it. I've seen in my own life several times where somebody went into the room with a more powerful person and pointed at the passage and says, here's what it says. I'm going by that.
Yeah.
Actually, Sid Ryan in his autobiography tells about an incident like that. We almost lost his job on a health and safety thing. But he just took a stand and says, I'm not going to do that job because I could die. Mm-hmm. And they went off and had a meeting, and he said, he pointed out to them the language which protected him, and he won. After that, the other guy said, I don't want to die either. I think I'll vote for Sid next time. We mice should vote for Sid. I think that's what they decided.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we're facing, and with this as our background, we have to go back again to now we're in August, and it's going to be the big showdown is coming with the major auto outfits, and you're somewhat concerned about the different strategies taken by the United Auto Workers and their fraternal partner, the Unifor, same employers.
Mm-hmm.
The approach they're taking.
Yes. It's really an unprecedented opportunity where the unions in both Canada and the United States are bargaining at the same time against corporations that have been making literally billions upon billions of dollars in profit and where the issues are very, very similar. We have the horrible virus of the two-tier wage and pension system, which has spread like crazy and undermined solidarity and working and living conditions for workers in the industry, driven down wages, We have growing use of temporary workers. They're called temporary, but they work full-time. It's just that they don't have seniority rights. They don't have any rights under the collective agreement. That's been growing. We have a tremendous loss of purchasing power of people's wages because of inflation and because we have given up the cost of living formula that we'd had in past contracts. And we've had a absolutely horrible devastation of the income of our retired workers, both in the United States and Canada, have had no increase in their pensions since 2007, so 16 years, while inflation has been 40%. And those issues have been identified by the new leadership of the UAW and Sean Fain. And Sean Fain has said that those issues must be addressed and solved in negotiations. And when he's asked if there's going to be a strike, he said that's up to the companies because we have to solve these issues. And to me, I know that those are the same issues in Canada, and I would like to see our leadership recognize that we would be stronger together if we coordinated our bargaining with a determination to restore cost of living and improve pensions and get rid of two-tier workers. Mm-hmm. And instead of that, we have not heard, in my opinion anyway, a clear delineation of what the bargaining issues are in Canada. And when asked about the UAW, Lana Payne said, Unifor has its own job to do. We have our own members to represent. We have a different situation in Canada, and we're going to chart our own course in this bargaining. And that was combined with her being extremely friendly and laughing and tee-heeing with the corporate executives and indicating that they
Yes, there's a picture of the star together. Of her and Mr. Stellantis wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yes,
I'll never forget that picture because he seems a very strange picture.
It's a very strange picture. And
but isn't that the individual that the leader of the UAW said he wouldn't shake hands with him until after the agreement? He said, I'm not shaking hands with anybody before.
Well,
or is that the Teamsters that
said
that?
No, it's not the same person because the guy with Lana is the Canadian executive. But
that's why he wears
but you're right, Sean Fain, for the first time in living memory, said he was not going to do the photo op, shake hands with the corporate executives and pretend to be friendly. Well, probably it hasn't been pretense in the past. They have been friendly rather than fighting for the workers. And he said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to shake their hands until after they meet our demands. And instead, he said he was going to have a member's handshake. So at the beginning of negotiations in the U.S., when they launched the negotiations, he went to the plants and met with workers and shook their hands. I think that's a great approach.
Yeah. Well, and what's this difference that is being referred to? I mean, as I have been reading them, and we've been spending, I guess, the spring, summer trying to win the love and attention of the battery companies and saying things like, oh, we work 24 hours a day, or we'll crawl in a plant, and, you know, you can bus us to any job. I mean, it was all kinds of stuff. But what could we do to make those companies happy?
Which mostly takes
and
money.
It seems to be spilling over into how do you negotiate with me, how desperately you want them to be the boss.
Yes, and that reading between the lines, I think that is the message that's coming from the Unifor leadership, which is that they are going to be cooperative and try to give corporations what they want and compromise on the needs of the workers. In Canada, we saw the Unifor leadership demanding that our governments provide more and more and more money to Stellantis and their partners in the battery company so that they would build a battery plant in Canada. And they ended up getting over $15 billion of public money. It's an immense amount. It's a phenomenal, unthinkable amount of money in order to just
When people thought $25 billion or whatever it was, but they said, "Oh, that's it. We're topping up." And then Stellantis said, "No, that's you gave him something. You know, it's like a kid, you know, dividing up candy. You gave him that." So then they said, "Okay, well, you can have $25 million more."
$15 billion, and each Volkswagen and Stellantis for plants that might employ 2,500 or 3,000 workers. And that it was not the attitude that was taken by the UAW leadership. They said that the U.S. government should not be handing out money to those corporations unless they guaranteed that the jobs were unionized and high-paying. Right now, where those battery plants exist, and GM has one in Lordstown, and the starting pay is $16 an hour. Mm-hmm. And, they wanted both. They want the billions of dollars of handouts of public money, and they want to drive down the wages.
But they use, of course, it's a logic that just won't quit, right? I mean, say, you know, if we're going to stay in business, you guys are going to have to give us more and more.
Yeah, it's the logic.
Longer hours, you have less for less. And if you buy the logic, you're done.
That's right. It's the logic of capitalism, and if you buy into it, you're not going to be able to do a proper job of representing workers because their interests are different.
Well, by the way, you raised the specter that you're afraid, too, that they might create an opportunity for divide and rule.
Yeah, and there's a stark illustration of that. The leader of the Stellantis Bargaining Committee, Dave Cassidy, was interviewed by the Windsor media, and he said that he does not expect many differences to be ironed out with the UAW. I'm not sure what that means, but he plans to get aggressive on the question of Canadian-made products. And here's the quote. "We're both going in at the same time," said Cassidy. "The fact of the matter is that if it comes down to product, I can play nice in the sandbox right until the facts come out, until the facts come that it's between us and the UAW. Then the gloves go off."
Wow, he's a sweetheart. That
and it's such a stark illustration
this
of
is
the
what,
dangers.
The leader of the UAW has called this, the race to the bottom.
It is the race to the bottom, and our union leadership should not be participating in it because it will be to the detriment of our members. We should be looking for solidarity, not saying we're going to try to take the work away from
And tackling these big issues, the part-time issue and the tier system, which is really, it gotten itself embedded. And the tier system divides workers within the union.
Yeah.
It inevitably leads to them fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we should always make a footnote that in Quebec, tier system is not allowed.
Not legal.
How do they get on in life without the tier system? I mean, didn't the sky fall when they did that?
Apparently not.
Yeah.
No, it's a very good point. And
no danger, by the way, of any social democrat in Ontario proposing that legislation. It's a little gift to management.
Unfortunately, somebody ought to, and the labor movement should be fighting for it.
Yeah. Well, we got a load of things to be watching closely. I guess that Teamster settlement should be quite. Could you tell us one more time the name of their leader and the philosophy he represents?
Yes, Sean O'Brien is the new leader of the Teamsters. He was elected with the support of Teamsters for a Democratic Union.
Oh, that's right. Their members can vote for the leader.
and the members voted. One member, one vote. And if you elect the right leadership, you can accomplish a lot.
Eccentric.
Their wage increases.
He gives himself a nickname, right?
Well, his Twitter handle for Sean O'Brien is SOB Teamster.
By the way, people, I'm glad to say that again. People should go to his Twitter account and find out what he's saying.
Yeah, check him out on Twitter, SOB Teamster, Sean O'Brien, and have a look at their tentative agreement. They negotiated pension increases of $1,000 a month for their members.
Wow.
On top of the pensions they were already getting, an additional $1,000 a month, $7.50 in wage increases over 5 years, converting part-time jobs to full-time jobs, getting rid of the second tier, and a number of other things that are all interesting, you know. No driver-facing cameras, so they addressed surveillance, air conditioning in the trucks, and they're not allowed to be forced to work a sixth shift. All full-time workers work either Monday to Friday or Tuesday to Saturday, and they can't be forced to work an additional shift.
That's great stuff. We should follow all these people. Well, Tony Leo, we're very grateful. A lot of information. Of course, we'll come back as this thing unfolds, particularly in the auto sector. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.